Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Lucky Few podcast, where we are shifting the narrative by shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome. This is Heather.
And Micah.
And Mercedes is not with us today, but today Micah and I are going to be talking about a recent decision that she's made to place Ace in what around these parts we might call a more restrictive environment, which is an idea that we can talk about and look at in a little more depth during this episode of what does it mean when we make the decision to put our children in a less inclusive setting? And is that even, what does that even mean for us? That's what we're trying to say here. What does that mean for us, for our kids, for inclusion, for our community? And we're going to get into that today as Micah shares that story with us. So thank you for joining us, friends, and welcome to the Lucky Few podcast. Hi friends, Heather here, and I know I don't have to tell you how challenging this school year has been. Every day, I sit back trying to get work done while I watch my kids' teachers do an impossible task, which in our home we are calling distance learning. As a former educator myself, I know a little gratitude goes a long way. So our team here at The Lucky Few created some simple yet beautiful printables as a way to say thank you to all the educators in our lives. They're available to you as well. Simply head over to theluckyfew.com and click on the Thank a Teacher link at the top of the page to download your prints. If you're one of the lucky ones who is actually sending your child to school for in-person learning, I'm very jealous, but you can attach the note to a plant or a gift card to a favorite local coffee shop, or you can just simply add the note to an email thanking your teacher for all his or her hard work. Because after all, gratitude is always free. So thank you, teachers, for all that you do. Okay, Micah. So we are recording this episode like a week out. Dear listeners, this was a week earlier. I feel like it's safe to say in a week, little will change, but also it's 2020, so the entire world could be literally on fire.
Even knows.
Exactly. Who knows? I mean, I live in California. California is on fire all around us. Our house, we woke up to just ashes and smoke because there's a fire in our local mountains. But next week will be our 7th week of distance learning for the Avises.
Wow.
And for those who started just after Labor Day and they're like, this is hard. I feel like a jerk because what I want to say back to you is, yeah, it doesn't get better. Maybe it does. I don't know, but you moved. You are on the East Coast, girl.
I know. I left you guys in California.
Oh my gosh.
I did. And I am in New Jersey and we are totally in between right now. Our stuff is still in California in storage, waiting for the movers to move it when we ask them to. We're in an Airbnb and making things work and hopefully moving into a house at the end of the month. So
okay.
If all continues to go well.
Right. And I think we talked about this on previous episodes, but Mercedes is not here because they just moved a week ago. And she just was like, girls, I'm living in boxes. And so she needed the day off, which is fine. And Josh and I moved 3 weeks from today.
Man,
aren't we funny?
Oh man.
We're funny.
It's like we just have little, it's our heart connections. We just can't not do what the others are doing. Let's just all move all at the same time. It's something there.
Yeah. So. And I keep waiting for everyone to just move into my backyard, but that isn't happening yet.
No, that was originally my plan before New Jersey. I was thinking about moving into your backyard. But then it didn't happen. But okay. I did, your town was inspiring to me. And I feel like my town is as close to as cute as your town
now
as possible.
Well, so,
but we will do an episode on moving and why all three of us chose to move. We'll just kind of like share our stories and what's been going on in our lives. And so I'm excited about that.
Well, I was just going to say, I can't wait to come to your house.
Yes, I can't wait for you to come to my house too. And I'm excited for the podcast, even though we're not in the same state anymore. I'm excited that we're going to be able to branch out and be more connected to people doing amazing things in the disability community on the East Coast.
Yes.
So even last week, I got connected to some people out here who are doing some really cool things that I'm hoping we can bring onto the podcast and tell our listeners about. So good things to come.
Good things to come. And I think it's just going to serve our podcast well and our community well, because we always talk about, I mean, we talk about education so much on here. And again, we're talking about that today. And all three of us are always like, well, this is how California does it, right? Obviously, we only know what we know. So it will be so helpful to get some other perspectives. And not that we're just, I know a lot of people believe that Californians just like put their blinders on and only know what's happening in California. But we try our best to stay updated and aware of what is happening outside of California.
Yes.
Right, exactly. But let's just start. Okay, so speaking of education.
Yes.
I'm going to share this little story. I don't even know how long ago this was, but a few months ago, and we've been in COVID for a few months, so maybe it was a few years ago. I don't even know.
I know.
It's been a while.
It might have been like March or April when we had this conversation.
And you reached out and you were sharing with me, and everything's even changed since then, as life is, but you had shared with me something about you were looking into moving to the East Coast.
Right.
You had lots of different options happening around you, and you were looking at schools. Education and support for ACE was one of your big determining factors for moving, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And so you were looking at different schools, and you had found a school that was Down syndrome specific, and you were considering ACE, going to the school, and you were talking to me about it, and sharing with me about it. And my response was like, yes, do that. That's great. And you had said something that stuck with me, and we've talked about it since, that you were nervous to tell me because of all the ways in which I speak out about inclusion and how we do on the podcast, and how a Down syndrome specific school in a way is the least inclusive kind of setting, right? Anything that is specific to one kind of people group is the least inclusive setting. And I also feel like, a side note, as I'm saying this, I'm processing here out loud, knowing like even everything that's happening with in our country with race and issues of race. And we've talked about this too, finding your people, that those settings are important sometimes, right? To have a space where you are with people who are just like you. It's important for your health, depending on who you are. But in education, I think everyone listening can agree that there is and has been a huge push, especially for Down syndrome, to be in inclusive settings. So,
yes.
And we've talked about it so much, right?
Yes.
So what, tell me more, tell our listeners more about when you talked to me about that. What made you feel nervous, besides how scary I can be?
You are, I mean, you're a terrifying human being, first of all.
I know.
You guys know that. Listeners, you know this. First of all, it has been a moral conundrum for me in general. Like, take it outside of my relationships with people like you. I feel strongly that it's a social justice issue, that our children should be fully included members of society. They should be fully included members of our education systems, like, you know, period. And that is what I've fought for. So I was on that team and worked really hard to get ACE into an inclusive setting for pre-K, so much so that we had to threaten a lawsuit to the school district and to get him into the inclusion classroom that he was in, which was a setting that had about 22 students, five of which had IEPs, and there was a general ed teacher and a special ed teacher in the classroom. And so it was a part of my DNA as ACE's mom, like, this is what we're going for, and this is my ultimate goal. And I'd read all the research, and I had all, and I still have all of that in the back of my mind, like, that adults with Down syndrome who are in inclusive settings are more able to flourish in their adult lives, to hold a job, to like live in community, to be independent. There's lots of studies that show this stuff. And so in my head, it had been like, I don't care about whether or not you educators think he qualifies for inclusion. Everyone should qualify for inclusion. Like, this is, you need to change your mindset, not us. Like, fit, ACE does not need to fit into your box of who gets to be included. And I still believe that. But I think what the past year revealed to me is that my mindset for ACE was, I want him included at all costs. And as you know, I've shared on this podcast about his autism diagnosis, about the challenges we've had. What I saw over the last 2 years while he was in this inclusion pre-K program was a lot of regression. ACE went into pre-K with several words that he spoke at home. Like, I would say probably 5 or 6 words that he said on a pretty regular basis, and maybe like 20 signs. He signed animal names. He did motions to songs. There were all kinds of things. And that part of why he got this autism diagnosis was that over the first year he was in pre-K from ages 3 to 4, all of that left, like all of the language he had went away. And I don't know the answer to that. Like, some people would say, oh, autism was caused by some kind of outside force. Like, it just showed up for him when he was 3. Like, you know, vaccines or yada, yada, toxins, whatever. Some people would say school wasn't meeting his needs. And I don't have an answer. Maybe it was his body. Maybe autism would have always come. I don't know. But it was a definite regression. And so I still, even with the autism diagnosis, went into our plan for kindergarten in the middle of last year, like pushing for general ed, pushing for full inclusion in his brother's school, a one-on-one aid, all of those things. And at the same time, as I've shared also in the podcast, I was recovering from a concussion and had constant migraines and was in bed. And a lot of what was revealed to me during that time was that I was just incapable of doing what I'd always done. And in my head, I was going to fight for inclusion for ACE. And it was a social justice issue to me, even if the school couldn't fulfill what they needed to fulfill for him. And I was going to step in and fill in the gaps. So I was getting him private speech. I was getting him private OT on top of what he was getting in school. He was having private feeding therapy. We were like doing so many things on the side that was my, all my afternoons were like, you know, schlopping him around. Schlopping, yeah. Is that a word?
I mean, it can be here.
Schlepping.
Schlepping. I think it's schlepping.
Schlepping.
Or driving. Driving him around.
Driving could be the word too. And once the concussion grounded me, I couldn't get him to those things. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's not getting his needs met. And I think what started to be revealed to me was, if it's dependent on me, I can't do everything. And what does that mean for my vision for him? Yeah. And you know, as I am going into kindergarten with him, not being potty trained and not speaking, and really, and now having been in COVID learning for so long, it feels like a lot of regression. Yeah. And I feel like the system as it is and what I've seen, we've talked about the system's not built for our kids. the idea of inclusion is not built for our kids. Mm-hmm. And we can fight, and it's hard, and I'm all for that battle. But I think for us in this moment, we needed to step back and say, I want ACE to be in a better place before I pull out those big guns again. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I want to, what I'm thinking about, what's resonating with me is this idea of social justice, which I think I'm assuming people have a different understanding of what that is, or some people have not really thought through that idea. And maybe not, maybe everyone's familiar with it, but it's like with inclusion specifically for our kiddos, social justice issues are happening because there is a majority that's receiving all the benefits and there is a minority that is not. Right. Or that a system is set up for a certain kind of person. And if you're not that person, then you can't participate in the system in a successful way. Social justice, right? And if everybody cared, if all of those who are benefiting from a system cared about that, then everyone would be for the social justice, and then it would be a non-issue. Then we move on to the next issue. And that, as a parent, you know, and any parent who has fought for inclusion, and I hate like this idea of fighting for it, but it is the right word in a lot of scenarios, and most we know that it is bigger than our kids, and it is a social, like you said, it is a social justice issue. And so you and I very much share that idea of, like, you're saying this is a moral issue for you. I talk about that, like, this is a conviction in my soul. This is something that we are going to do as a collective, because I think you and I also share this. We're just justice driven people. And it doesn't just stop with inclusion. Like, I can look back into my childhood and see ways in which social justice issues were coming up, but there's nothing my parents taught me. It was just like, oh, this is, I'd see things and be like, this is totally unfair. How is this happening? Why can't we fix this? So that's also just ingrained in me. And then knowing, having been in this Down syndrome community for as long as we have been, for as long as I have been as a mom and as an influencer, and then as a podcast host, like in a setting in which there's some authority, I hear from, at this point in life, thousands of moms who want the social justice. They're exhausted from fighting for it. And then at the end of the day, their priority is their kid, as it should be. And how do you hold all that? Right. And that's, I feel like that's exactly where you've landed, is what do you do next? And if you do the thing that's best for your kid as an individual, then you're looking at an individual instead of at the larger picture, which is why social injustices exist at all oftentimes. Right. Totally. And like, but your kid is your priority, and you don't do it at the expense of your kid. And then at the same time, within the Down syndrome community especially, there is just the loudest voice for inclusion, 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 which you and I are on that, like you and I are holding that megaphone, right? Yeah, we're holding the megaphone.
Yeah.
But it does seem like you get to a point where if I'm going to continue to step into non-inclusive settings and fight for inclusion without the right supports, without the right like community behind me, at some point you just get exhausted and then you have to make a decision to not do it anymore. And so when you make that decision, does that mean that you're no longer for the social justice?
Are you not fighting for the common good? Are you
right,
just protecting your kid?
Right. And to that, I would say a resounding, of course not. Like, of course you are still for, I'm not sure how to answer that. So let me clarify. Of course you can make the decision. Like, you specifically, you, whoever's listening, can make the decision for your child to be in a more restrictive environment, in a less inclusive setting, and still be for the larger cause. Of course. I see that real clear. I also know that we live in a day and age where I see things like crystal clear, and everyone around me disagrees with me, and I'm like trying to figure this out, you know, like with politics and the race conversation. Sure. And so I don't know if I need glasses or I don't know. But it's tricky. It's tricky. So then when you called me that day and we talked about it, And you felt relief. What was that relief about for you?
I think the relief was as friends, I think I needed you to know how heavy it was for me, that decision. And I think I wanted you to know that I hadn't stopped caring, like that I wasn't giving up on this belief or this, like, and that I wasn't making this decision based on like, no, it's not my moral responsibility, you know? So, you know, one of the things that when we got Ace's autism diagnosis, I was furious because I sat in this room with the doctors who were giving him the diagnosis, and they looked me in the eyes and they were like, I'm so sorry. Inclusion will never work for your son. And I was like, who do you think you are? And you've known him for 6 hours. Like, what does that even mean? And I think the question for me was like, what I've had to come to is, no, what I believe inclusion should be works for my son.
Right.
It's what all of you think inclusion is. That doesn't work 100%. For my son.
Right.
And that's what's infuriating. But I also believe, like, I've had to kind of give myself a hierarchy of my calling, if that makes sense. Like, I can choose to go down the path of pursuing inclusion at all costs right now in this moment in Ace's life. But that means I'm not writing. I'm not speaking. I'm not doing the other things that I feel like are important parts of my calling, because to pursue inclusion for Ace and to teach everybody what I think it ought to mean is not what I have the space and time for in this moment.
Yes. And can I interrupt you and say,
yeah,
even just saying that and talking about social injustices, that the fact that you can make the decision to, or I could, to leave everything else and just pursue inclusion for our kid.
Totally.
Right. And the fact that so many people can't, because then there's no food on the table. Right.
Absolutely.
Or fill in the blank, that alone, even like, even now the pursuit of inclusion, there's injustices within that, because Absolutely. Not everybody deserves it. Not everybody has the capacity or the wherewithal to fight for it.
Right.
Right.
Right. Because to fight for it, you have to understand the law. You have to like get a lawyer to help you. You got to get the advocates. You've got to have time to do all this stuff and not be working. Like it's silliness. And so, yeah, I think for me, we've made this decision to move across the country because our life was not healthy. It was, we weren't flourishing in San Francisco. We were overwhelmed. It was so expensive. Our kids were stressed out. Mm-hmm. We were stressed out. And I was really sick.
Yeah.
And I think for us, we've moved to family. Chris's family is on the East Coast. We've moved to a simpler town. We've moved to a less expensive market where you can own a house. Mm-hmm. And I've also just made the deliberate choice of, I want Ace to be in a classroom where he is getting all the speech he needs, period. Mm-hmm. I want him to get all the intervention he needs. I need him to be taught the way that he learns. You know, one of the things that I saw in his inclusion classroom and how his autism was playing out was that there would be free time or time when kids would choose where they wanted to go in the room. You know, they could go to the sensory bin, they could go paint, they could go look at books. And during, sorry, that's Ace in the background, excited about the Octonauts he's watching. And in those moments when the other kids were choosing to go somewhere and the teachers were helping those kids, Ace was in the corner rolling on the mats.
Right.
Or stimming.
Right.
And there are so many things like that I knew if I put him into a general ed classroom with a one-on-one, like maybe the one-on-one could help him. And I'm sure that there would be ways to teach him, but in terms of like the amount of intervention I want him to get, the way that his sensory needs need to be met, it's simpler right now to put him in a self-contained classroom.
Yeah. And even like you're saying, you said a minute ago when you had that meeting and the guy was like, inclusion will never work for your son. It's kind of like, let's say that guy had a son who's internal ed and he's going to be like, inclusion's never going to work for your son. Right? Like, how do we let everyone realize when you like flip the tables there, if you're going to have a school that is not built for or moving towards an inclusive environment with inclusive practices, then everyone in general education is also not receiving inclusion, right? It's all, everyone's just in their own little groups. So it's not working for you either, dear people who don't want our kids with disability, or who don't want to make the changes needed so that our kids with disabilities can thrive in with their peers in the school.
Yep. And you know what that ultimately results in is a culture like we have right now, where everyone is divided into groups and we cannot hear each other and we can't see each other. And we are teaching that to our children as we divide them into groups according to their abilities. And
starting at 3 years old.
Yep. And according to their income, right?
Yes.
That's how schools are set up already too.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to say this out loud and we're going to get a lot of hate, and that's fine. And we can unpack it later. But you and I have had this conversation too of like, private schools are an injustice, period. And we do not say that in a way that's judgmental for people choosing a private school, because you also have chosen that for your son at one point, right?
My now Brooks and August are in a private school here.
Yeah. So you, it's so like, you,
I'm just a bundle of contradictions.
I'm not throwing you under the bus, girl. You, my, one of my very best friends in the whole world, my person, we've felt the same way too. And she put her daughter in private, one of her daughters in private school this year. And it is just that the conversation, like the battle back and forth of like, but this goes against my moral convictions for social justice and the education system for all. And it's what's best for my kid, you know? And so I think we have to, as parents, as individual moms, I think we need to be able to step back and assess what's happening in our own lives and in our kids' lives and in our family unit as a whole, and how the decisions we make are going to affect the greater good for what it is that we are for, and then make the decisions we need to make. And then as onlookers, we have to trust that people are doing what they believe is best for them in a thoughtful way. You know, like, it's not just like, well, screw you, I'm scared of my kid being molested in public school, so I'm sending them to private school.
Right.
This is literally something I've heard someone say in the last month. And that's that, period. It's like, if you're making a thoughtful decision, then there has to be some trust there. I feel like I'm starting to sound judgy towards people, and I'm not meaning to. I know I have strong convictions and thoughts, and I do believe in the idea of believing the best in others. And I think that we can do a better job of that.
Yeah.
You know, even in the inclusion conversation, that we're going to believe the best in others.
Yes. And I think this question, I feel like it's really hard to talk about inclusion and not talk about racial injustice. It's, and not talk about income injustice in our country and in the world, because it all falls back into these same systems that are treating people on the margins, people in the minorities, where they're not given what the people in the majority are given.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it comes to race in America, when it comes to ableism, and I think it's so important for us to make these decisions with that in mind. Like, I didn't go into this move and make this decision for my boys to be in the school that I put them in lightly. And I'm still feeling a lot of feelings about it. I don't feel perfect about it. But I also feel like our home is peaceful for the first time in years, because my oldest son has the school that he is at has turned his anxiety meter down way lower. and he's happy.
Yeah.
And so how do you weigh that? How do you weigh, like, do I force my kids into a place where they are not getting their needs met for the sake of the greater good? And if that results in chaos in my house.
Right.
And that I think there are people who would say, yes, you do. Yes, you do. Because this is the greater good. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's an easy answer, and I'm not here saying that everybody should do what they want to do. But I am putting it out there that, it's been a hard few years in our family, and we have needed to do drastic things to bring peace, for our kids and to help our kids' needs be met. And this is how we found to do it. And I don't think it means that from now on, I'm going to be like self-contained forever for Ace and private school forever for my other boys. But I want to hold it with open hands and be aware that my decisions affect the world too. Mm.
You do it all with such grace, Micah. And yeah, I think that there's so many different ways to approach it. And I like how you approach it with such grace in that there's like an awareness of what it means for you and what it means for others. I think that's an important part of the conversation. And that doesn't necessarily always mean that you're going to do what's best for the whole. You can still choose what's best for you, but you have an awareness about it. And that it's fluid. You know, I think that it is, like you're saying, this might not be it forever. It's fluid. And during all this racial unrest in our nation, I have quite a few of my friends who are Black who have posted or shared with their community on social media or whatever, the idea that rest is resistance, and that I'm not meaning to compare this situation of inclusion with people with disabilities to racial injustices for the Black community in the United States. But the idea that sometimes the resistance is found in a different way. Mm. And that just because you're choosing something different doesn't mean that you're not still for the greater good of the cause. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does. And I think we don't talk enough about rest, and especially not in our bigger Down syndrome / disability community.
Yeah.
We are, like, for the most part, the listeners to this podcast are moms, and this, like, the Instagram world we live in is moms, and we are all, like, fighting and working so hard for our kids, and we don't talk a lot about giving ourselves rest, or mm-hmm. that there are moments, you know, I think it's come up even as we talk about COVID, and we were having that conversation a couple of weeks ago on our episode where we talked about, you were talking about just taking your kids out. And I was like, hey, this year's a wash anyway.
Right.
Like, what if they don't go to school this year? Like, mm-hmm. I think that we have these ideas of, like, well, we have to follow the rules and we have to keep our kids going this specific way, or they need to graduate when they're 18, or they would, whatever it is, that sometimes I think we need to take a step back, especially our culture is just so intense, so anxiety driven, so performance driven. And as moms of kids with different abilities, we are working so hard on their behalf. And sometimes we just need a break. Yeah. We can't do it all. And it's okay to be like, hey, let's just stop.
Totally.
let somebody else teach my kid for a little bit and see what happens.
Yeah. And that inclusion isn't just schools, right? Like an inclusive mindset and the idea of inclusion is holistic in that it is your community, it's your church, it's your neighborhood. It's, hey, Ace, we're going to go to the park over here where you're going to behave in a way that's probably going to make some of the kids watching feel uncomfortable. And us showing up is the resistance, right? Like, us showing up is saying we are for inclusion and we're going to keep fighting for what we know is best for everybody. And I've said this so many times and I'll keep saying it, by not making our education system inclusive for all, by not enlisting inclusive practices, everybody is missing out. And we talked about it a little earlier, alluded to that, you know, everybody in the general ed setting is missing out on life skills and on character issues, right? And on moral issues and on justice issues, because when they are not given the opportunity to learn alongside their peers with disabilities or who are a different race or who are a different socioeconomic background or who spoke right. a different language at birth or whatever it is. And the more that we segregate our schools, because our schools are still very segregated in a lot of ways, the less likely that our kids are going to grow up as healthy, whole adults. And yes. I say that and I mean that.
Amen.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Anyway, I'm sure there's so many people who are mad at us right now, and that's okay. We'll keep talking about it. I feel like I have these really strong convictions and I say them and then it sounds judgy. And then I go back, I swing real hard the other way of like, but do your best and you're okay just doing your best. And then it's like, well, now you sound like you're contradicting yourself. I don't know, friends. Okay.
I don't think it's judgy to say that the world needs to know each other, that people need to know each other, that we should be I'm reading, D.L. Mayfield's book, The Myth of the American Dream, which I highly recommend everybody. And one of the chapter I just finished talked about how kinship should be our highest goal, like not diversity, not necessarily equality, but kinship. And I love this idea that we are all connected. When we don't live like we're all connected, that's when we are not flourishing. We're breaking apart. We're raising our kids to not understand the world or to see themselves as the center of the universe and not live in a way that where their goal is to serve their neighbor.
And yes.
So yes, schools should teach
amen and amen.
Teach us to serve our neighbors. It should teach us to serve our disabled neighbor and our neighbor of a different race, a different socioeconomic background. Our neighbor who is an immigrant or is maybe illegal. And all of those things, if we're not teaching our kids those things, then they are lacking. They're not getting what they need.
Yeah, which like you said, is evident in the atmosphere of our culture right now.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely.
We can do better, friends. And what I love about our kids with Down syndrome is if I didn't have kids with Down syndrome, I wouldn't be having this conversation, and that they've completely shifted my idea of what it means to be human. And they like, there's such a goodness in understanding these important values that people with Down syndrome have brought to the table, have revealed. So Micah, thank you for sharing. And I'm sure we'll have some follow-ups and we'll want to continue to know more. And I mean, cheering you on for all three of your boys and for your move, and just want to commend you on the decisions you've made to land where you are right now. So you are always a role model for me. And I really
Heather,
love you.
Thanks, girl.
You're welcome.
And I do want to say to our listeners, like, I think that we want this to be a space where, of course, we have talked a lot about inclusion, but I wanted to share this story because I want you all to know that we understand that it's really hard and it's hard to make these kinds of decisions. So we want you to know that wherever you are, if you are like shooting down the doors of the school district and threatening lawsuits, then you do it. And if you are like, I just don't know, and I'm just going to go with what they're pushing for, which is this self-contained classroom, we just want you to know that we are not looking down at you. We want to lift up the whole culture. We want to lift up the whole society, and we are also cheering you on because we know how hard it is to make these decisions for your kid.
That's right. Okay, friends, on that note, Micah, thanks for being our guest today. we're going to take a minute to hear from a sponsor, and then we'll be back with some good news. Hey there, friends. Heather Avis here, podcast host and author of Scoot Over and Make Some Room, a book about creating a space where everyone belongs. Scoot Over and Make Some Room is my second book, and although it came out in 2019, its message of inclusion and making space in our world for people who are different than us could not be more relevant or timely. You can head to the link in our show notes, as well as to any of your favorite book retailers, to grab a copy for you and a friend or 10 friends. Heck, make a book club out of it, because if there's something we need in our world right now, it's for ways to see the worth and value in everybody around us. Let's commit to creating a world where everyone belongs. Okay, I think it's been a hot minute since we've had a good news song, Micah Boyette.
Yeah. I'm gonna sing a good news song. I'm gonna sing it in this Airbnb where I live. Good news, good news, good news.
Yes. That's like in the high falsetto. I like it.
Thanks, girl. Thanks.
Okay, we have some good news for our listeners, which is exciting.
So exciting.
Enoel83 on Instagram, who's my friend, hi Elizabeth, she said, my boy had his new hearing aid implant turned on this morning and it works. So fun. If you guys don't, you should go to Instagram. The handle is Enoel83. Enoel, she has two boys with Down syndrome. And yes, one just got his hearing aid implant. And that's so exciting. Good news, girl.
Oh, amazing. We also have another good news from Her Family Antics. I think I got it. She shared, my girl had a great first day of in-person school, which we are just feeling the joy of in-person school.
I don't know where that collective we came from.
Well, I am feeling your joy.
I'm no bitter every time someone posts my kids went to school today. I'm like, and I hate you, so we're not talking about that. We're 6 weeks in, friends.
Let's hold both of these things, Heather.
I know, I'm excited.
Celebrate other people and hold your pain.
I can do both. Anyways, thank you so much for your good news. If you have good news to share about your loved one who has Down syndrome, or if you're a person with Down syndrome and you want to share some good news, you can go to our Instagram at The Lucky Few Pod, where you can leave it in a comment. You can leave us a direct message. You can head to theluckyfewpodcast.com, where you will find a phone number you can call to do a voicemail. You can text us good news. You can email us good news, or just email us. Let us know your thoughts on this episode and any future episodes you want to hear. If you have a product or a business and you want to help support the podcast and shout the worth of people with Down syndrome, we would always love to partner with you. You can email us at hello@theluckyfewpodcast.com for sponsorship opportunities. And as always, a huge thank you to our editor, Joshua Douglas Avis, to our producer, Val Schleter, our sponsor, and to everyone who has shared the Lucky Few podcast with friends, those of you who listened faithfully and cheered us on, to all of you out there making big, hard decisions for your kiddos when it comes to school. We are cheering you on. We are for you. So if you are a listener, please don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done that yet. And leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Every subscription and review helps the podcast be seen and heard more, which is just going to help with this inclusive idea.
Woo!
Woo!
You're going to change this world.
That's right. With just a review. That's right. Keeping on. We're cheering for you. Until next time. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.